Welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa, I'm your host, and in today's episode, I'm speaking with Jeffrey Su, nutrition, fitness, and business coach at First Call Out Fitness. Jeff and I speak about how to get started as a coach, how to sequence your intervention when multiple things require attention, and more. I hope you enjoy the episode, and please, if you like this show, subscribe and give us a rating, or take a screenshot and share the episode on your social media. Thank you so much, and as always, if you want personalized help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we are your go-to coaches. Just hit the contact link in the show notes for more details. Now on to my conversation with Jeff. Jeffrey Su, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's been a while.
It's been a while, and it's my absolute pleasure to speak with you today to get into all things nutrition, fitness, and business coaching. But okay, to start us off, I'd love to hear, what's the number one thing you're excited for our listeners to learn today?
I guess we're going to be talking about everything, right? Hormones, labs, gut health, even the business side, maybe the social media side. So maybe, just keeping an open mind, not just of what we're talking about today, but in general, be an open-minded coach. Because I think from what you guys will hear, you know, myself and you discuss today, a lot of things are changing, shifting. A lot of the things I've done in the past, you know, I have a different stance on now. So it's the constant evolution that makes us great. And so I think keeping an open mind in general would be a good takeaway.
I think that's really great, because often people head into coaching with preconceived notions or with just their previous experience and just sort of starting everything from a blank slate, and just allowing yourself to be guided, to be coachable, is really, really important. So I guess that brings up the question for me in general. If someone comes to you and they have numerous things that they want to work on, or that you realize they need to work on, how do you prioritize your sequence, or how do you determine your sequence of intervention when there are multiple things that require attention?
Yeah. So when I first started into, you know, functional health coaching and working labs and all these issues that we see, I was very much like, you know, they have like poor sleep, they need to take this supplement. If there's this gut issue, get the GI map done, shore up this gut bacteria, lower this other gut bacteria, change this ratio. And, you know, as I've evolved as a coach and just, you know, as a student of all this over time, I've branched out and more so looked at it in a multifaceted plane, so to speak. And so everything that I mentioned just now, that is just one component of it. And it is the physiological component. But there is also the lifestyle environmental component. There is the, you know, support system resources component. And there is also the mental and emotional component. And if you look at those in like quadrants, so to speak, with a client in the center, then you begin to see how problems branch out and have different roots in different areas, and they all feed into each other. And every client is unique within that particular mix of aspects and feeders. You know, so when I first get someone, I usually map things out and I look at, you know, what's the low-hanging fruit? And how are those rooted into the bigger picture here? What's feeding up and down and left and right? And I usually pick the easiest, as I said, low-hanging fruit, the easiest win that I can achieve for the client in the shortest amount of time to gain their trust and build their confidence so that I can take them further.
That's a really, really great point also for the coaches listening, I think, because often we feel like we need to do everything at once, and then A, we overwhelm the client, and then B, they might not see success in any of it because they're only doing everything a little bit. And as we know, especially having that initial buy-in and gaining their trust and keeping the motivation going in the beginning is so, so important if we want to really have a long-term coaching relationship with our clients. So I really, really love that. And I mean, like, speaking of overwhelm, as I was just saying, like, if we give someone too much to do, if someone is a perfectionist, and I assume many of your clients might be, or at least many of our listeners are maybe recovering perfectionists like myself as well. How do we prevent that from happening if you have that initial conversation. They're like, there are so many things wrong with me, I don't even know where to start. But then they want to do everything just perfectly.
Well, there's a couple of components, psychological components, rather, when you get a client like that, and especially in the functional health space, I feel like it's a very unique clientele. And these people are usually high achievers in their personal and professional lives to be able to seek out coaching within the functional health space because it does come at a certain cost, an entry point. And so to be able to afford that, you have to have a certain lifestyle, a certain income, and therefore a certain career, that affords that. And so there are a lot of high achievers, type A, obsessive types, the types that want to have it all, and they all want it now. And so there's that component to it. There's also the component that they could be looking for things like in the wrong places, and they focus on, physical ailments and things like that without, looking into relationships or therapy or whatever, right? And then there's the impatience component, okay? And so they've been struggling for a lot of these issues for a long time. They've tried five, six different coaches or practitioners, and they're finally at your, Zoom meeting and you're doing a consult, right? So what I do to manage this type of thinking is I will roadmap out, the first 3 months. So I go in 3 month chunks. And then I break each month out by week. And I tell them, this is what we're going to focus on based off of what you've asked me to focus on. These are the good things that we should try to achieve and that we should see improving. But these are some of the bad things too that I want you to kind of take note of, but let's not react to it right away. Let's just note it and table it. And I never did that prior to, I would say, late last year. And so I'd constantly be having to manage these personalities and say, no, we got to do this, we got to do that. But by laying it out, we agree on a game plan and it's written in stone. And we just sort of deviate slightly from it based off of life.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. I love that, especially in regards to single focus, or it might not be one thing, but it might be five things, but not 25, right? And the things that we focus on and give the most energy to, they're gonna bloom. So if, again, if they get the wins there, that's also gonna help them feel positive about the whole experience. And what I sometimes find helpful with perfectionists as well is, rather than giving them like very specific numbers, like many people are like, oh, it doesn't really have to be 61 or 62 grams of fat. And so I'd rather be like somewhere between 60 to 65, or in reality, often even just saying like, hey, let's just do like calories and protein. And they're like, what? But I want to have a fat target. I'm like, it doesn't really matter. Can we kind of move away from that? Especially if it might be someone who does have gut health issues, therefore probably also stress issues, therefore also, all these kind of things. So kind of giving them a little bit of a longer leash, and pushing them almost into a little bit more flexibility in that sense.
Absolutely. Yep, that makes sense. I mean, if you think about it, right? If a coach writes down 62 grams of fat and you follow that, is it really 62 grams of fat? Are you sure that every nutrition label that you're reading is precise? We know they're not, right? So
Exactly.
you could be at 68 and you think all this time you're at 62. And then, in terms of calories, right? We know that the body is like calories in, calories out. Of course, hormones play a role, right? However, are you taking the exact same steps every day? Are you making the same movements every day? These little movements, these little ticks that burn calories as well? No. So it's never exact. It doesn't matter. It can be in a range.
Absolutely, and stressing over that is just gonna make things worse, because then
Yes.
you're like raising your cortisol and so on. And I mean, okay, speaking of stress, that's actually a good sort of segue into gut health as well,
Yeah.
because I remember you saying from one of our previous conversations, by far within your clients, how stressed they are, or how much stress they perceive rather, is one of the biggest contributors to whether someone is like constipated or not, or is having gut issues because of stress. I remember you saying like you have competitors very much at the end of their prep and they're super chill type of people. They have absolutely no gut health issues or digestive issues. And you also have your busy mom who technically, like on paper, she doesn't have a job, but she's just, you know, full on with her kids at home, and she's always constipated because the stress just gets to her. So I think how we perceive stress is really, really big. Maybe you can speak on that again, and then maybe also mentioning some other reasons why you see gut health issues.
Yeah, so with the stress component, I mean, people change their eating habits due to stress. You know, some people don't eat, some people overeat. And these things obviously can, directly impact motility and digestion, directly impacting constipation, diarrhea, things like that. Not eating or eating the wrong foods, because you gravitate towards comfort foods over time. If that's your chosen stress response, it can lead to nutrient deficiencies. That's what leads to gut health, bacteria imbalances, or dysbiosis, right? That we see on the GI map or the Genova. So largely, I always call it user error. It's like, our bodies are very resilient and very smart, but over time, if you're stubbornly doing the wrong things over and over and over again, there is wear and tear that will occur on the physiological systems, and that's why we see what we see in the functional space. Other contributors to gut health issues, I would say, is number one is like alcohol, drug use, whether it's PD or recreational drug use, and then also just repetitive bland diets, chicken and rice 6 times a day, or fad diets, or eating a lot of one thing, thinking that's a great thing. Those any sort of extremes repeated over and over again will, result in that wear and tear that I speak of, and that's how you get these problems.
Yeah, and I think we just sort of train our body and digestive system to be so super sensitive to anything and everything that's not that, like, on the point of repetitive behavior. So then that person that always has chicken and rice and feels great with that at the time, maybe if they eat one other thing one time, then they're like, oh wow, I was so bloated, or I didn't tolerate that so well. And it sometimes makes me sad because we're like inflicting that on ourselves. And thankfully, I do believe that over time that can be kind of restored, or we can work with, especially like previous competitors that might have suffered or are suffering from that. But yeah, it's sometimes a little bit sad how we're limiting ourselves by doing so.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you see that a lot within the competitor space. And then now, a lot of the general population individuals, since bodybuilding and competing is so mainstream now, they try to imitate, what they see on social media, or what, the jacked guy or shredded girl in the gym tells them to do. And they hang on to that, and that's like all they do. And that creates problems as well.
So I'd love to hear from you if you have any supplements that you recommend generally across the board for better gut health or for gut health altogether.
Yeah, I think some general supplements that anybody can take without having to do lab work or worry about too many interactions would be vitamin D, magnesium, zinc. All those things can help there. And then in terms of if you're struggling with constipation or gas or bloating, diarrhea, there is Iberogast, which is really good. And something called Motil Pro, which is just powdered ginger.
Okay, great.
So you can look, anyone listening, you can feel free to look those up on Amazon. And those are very like gentle, like I call them like first or second tier supplements to tackle any acute symptoms. And then if symptoms persist, I like to use a tiered approach. So you don't go in with a sledgehammer, you go in with a little hammer first, right? And then you work your way up. And then there are some situations where you use like magnesium citrate, or if there needs to be an over-the-counter laxative employed for certain cases acutely, I've done that before as well. But take it step by step, but you can start with those.
Yeah, I think that's really great, especially for people that often or regularly just have a harder time passing stool and so on. And so instead of always relying on laxatives or constantly just saying like that's my norm, it's just normal for me that I only go to the bathroom every third day, which it's not, it should be fixed. So rather than settling on that, and I mean we sort of ventured into this through the path of stress and hormones all together. So let's talk a little bit more about hormones. And I'm really curious because I personally have just recently tried a little experiment on myself with regards to cold plunging. I was always terrified of it because, well, I am someone with like, I'm prone to overstressing, and I've come from not adrenal fatigue, but I would say like at one point in my life when I was working in the police and training several times a day for CrossFit and so on, I was close to that anyway. So I'm just very cautious of my stress load and was very hesitant of implementing cold plunges. But yeah, what's your take on hot and cold exposure as it pertains to stress for both men and women? Because I do believe that there might be a difference sometimes.
Okay, so you might know more than I do on this because personally, I have never done that myself. The only time that I've ever done a cold plunge is when my water heater broke and I had to take a cold shower. Yes.
Love it.
And it was a very, very uncomfortable experience. And I've talked, I have a therapist that I work with, and he, talks about the benefits of, just running cold water under you for, 30 seconds, working up to a minute or whatever. But it's more so having to do with dopamine fasting and
Right.
being used to being uncomfortable so that you're not constantly seeking that dopamine high, right? You get more satisfied easier. That's all I know about it. I don't know anything about the physiology behind it or the differences between the sexes. So that I
Right.
can't speak on.
No, I appreciate the honesty there, and I love the word dopamine fasting or the phrase dopamine fasting. I've never heard that before, and I think it needs to be employed more often for everybody, even just like I mean if we put our lock our phone away for some time, that's a type of dopamine fasting, or just telling yourself you're not eating that for another 2 hours, that's a type of dopamine fasting. So everybody can do that in one way or another. And I guess to share a little bit about my cold plunge experience, I did really make sure that it's not too close to bedtime. It's not too close to my training time either, in order not to like impede hypertrophy or anything like that. And I truthfully can't say how it's been affecting my recovery, because a lot of people are asking me, oh, have you been recovering better or anything like that? And I don't feel any difference in that regard. But what I do feel is, or what I've witnessed is just how my mind has grown through it. So at the particular place that I go to, the temperature there, oh, well, it's in Celsius. So what's that in Fahrenheit? It's 7 degrees Celsius. So that would be 43, I believe, in Fahrenheit. So I mean, it's not ice water, but it's decently cold. And the first time I went in there, I only managed to stay in 90 seconds. And by now, I've worked my way up to the maximum of 10 minutes. You can't stay in for longer than 10. They don't allow it. And I was very much impressed with how my mind would do that, because I hate, anyone who knows me knows I hate the cold. Like, I really hate the cold. And so this has been like a personal achievement for me more than anything. But yeah, physiologically, it hasn't impacted my sleep or my hormones so far in a negative or positive way. But generally speaking, from what I hear, is just that women are a little bit more sensitive to the stress response through the ice, and therefore should be more cautious if they're already in a very high stress state, of course, or if they're already doing all these other stressful things like high intensity training or anything like that. But okay, so going back to the hormones altogether, if someone wants to know their current state of sex hormones or just generally hormones, of course, we ideally run lab work. How can we understand our lab work a little bit better? Because I think oftentimes people just get lab work printed or sent to them by their practitioner, and they don't necessarily say much. They say like, oh, okay, you're in the normal ranges, or there's a couple that are highlighted, but you don't necessarily get any instructions on how to fix them. So what would be a first step for people to understand lab work better?
All right. So, I mean, lab work, the first thing is like, when you go through your doctor, your PCP, or your OB or your endocrinologist, they're likely not going to run everything. They're limited largely by the insurance companies, so they may push back on you if you're a perimenopausal woman looking for her progesterone levels, for example. So there are companies out there, two that I use here in the US would be Direct Labs and Life Extensions. There are some restrictions based off of the states. I think it's like New York, New Jersey, Rhode Island, maybe Connecticut. Some of them don't service those states. But for the most part, you can get what's called a comprehensive hormone panel off of those websites, and they test your sex hormones, insulin, cortisol, everything that a functional practitioner or a health coach would want to see. And you can bring it to your doctors as well and inform them if, they had previously refused to run lab work for you. I think the main takeaway for labs, because it can definitely get very hairy when we talk about lab work, depending on the case or the condition, is that it's important to understand clinical data, which is like, your lab results, but also your subjective interpretations and your symptoms. So it's all about optimizing how you feel. It's not about optimizing the number or getting you close to the range or whatever the range may be for whatever you're testing. It's about how you feel. So make sure, like, your listeners here, make sure you can take that away. And the other thing is like when we're coming, into the age of optimization and longevity, it's not about, the 40 or 50-year-old man making him feel like he's 20 again. You can't do that because that's like putting like a supercharged engine into like a 1986 Buick that still has the original axles and everything else, and you're gonna fall apart. That's why, like, if you're a 47-year-old man, you shouldn't be taking a gram of testosterone and a whole bunch of other PEDs. You're gonna have a heart attack. So that is another thing. So be cautious of optimization and boosting levels. Okay. So pay attention to how you feel, avoid boosting everything. Okay. And then I think the other thing about lab work too is don't underestimate the power of stress perception, lifestyle, adherence and everything, because that truly affects your internal workings. So it's not just about taking this or that supplement or HRT to correct imbalances. It's looking into your lifestyle in general.
I think that's such a great point in regards to listening to your intuition and listening to your body. I actually just had a client reach out yesterday, and he was like, "Lisa, I went to the doctor. I got my annual blood work, and they're like, oh, everything is fine, but like we've been saying, my energy levels are so low. I don't feel like I'm running as well as I used to." And so I'm like, "Well, then go and push for something." If you tell them that, or we know that the quote unquote normal ranges that they often have are based on where you live, and if you look around you, you're the majority of people are living suboptimal lives, to say it mildly, and they're just sort of settling for whatever they're in there. They're not even used to feeling great or knowing what it feels like to be healthy. So, we don't just want to settle for normal. We definitely want to strive for optimal.
Optimal, I would say, not maximization, again, optimal. But a good analogy would be like, the average household income in the US is, I think it's $55,000. That's the average. But you go to places like California, New York, where I live in Massachusetts, you can't live on $55,000 a year, or if you're a parent, your kid comes home with a D minus on an exam, the range is F to A plus. You want them closer to like B's and A's, right? So same thing with lab work. It's, the ranges are based off the average population. And unfortunately, average people aren't doing too well these days.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is the truth. I always say the same thing when people are like, "Oh, I just want to eat normal for once. I miss eating normal." I'm like, "Well, if you eat normal, you're gonna look normal. You're gonna have all the normal results. You're gonna have the normal heart disease. You're gonna have the normal cardiovascular risk. We can't. If you want to live a normal life, that's the you're gonna deal with the normal outcomes."
There is no such thing as normal in anything in life, and there's no such thing as balance either, I would say.
Well, that's another good sort of segue because you obviously are also a bit of a business coach and you wear many hats. You're a very busy individual yourself. So I'm kind of curious, Jeff, how you personally maintain your own health in a demanding job.
Well, I mean, it's like I said, it's not about balance, it's about shifting priorities. Certain things have to take a back seat during certain times or seasons of your life. I know I was very focused on myself and bodybuilding and competing, back in 2023. That took a back seat all of 2024, and I have no plans on competing anytime soon. I was mentoring a lot of coaches very heavily, teaching a lot of classes. I pulled back on that as well, so that I could focus more on the client side. I started another business. I have another business, two other businesses in the works right now. And so these are all shifts, the income shifts, my enjoyment shifts, where I prioritize my work efforts. It's all changing. But overall, if you keep doing this over time, you grow. It's not this the whole way, and that's what I explain to clients as well, because like I said earlier, everyone wants to have it all at once, and they have this idea of maintaining balance throughout that process, and it's a myth. It doesn't happen that way.
No, really, I love what you say, and I think that's one of the benefits of being an entrepreneur. You can give yourself that freedom of the fluidity of like, hey, okay, right now I'm enjoying this a lot. I really want to focus on, I don't know, mentoring, and you're going all in on that, and obviously still keeping your fingers on the other things that you've got going on, and then you shift into other perspectives. And I think the same is should be the case when we look at our own or other people, even if it's not their profession, but looking at their own training. Hey, okay, during this phase of life, I was able to go to the gym 6 times. Now maybe it's only 3 times because I have kids and because I do have other commitments as well. So just being a little bit gracious with yourself and accepting that we only have one energy bucket and we just need to sort of distribute the energy accordingly to what life throws at us or which avenues we want to go down to. And yeah, I guess in terms of that balance as well, what would be some strategies that you would give to other coaches, if they're like, hey, my clients are struggling to adhere to their training, to their nutrition, because they're saying they're too busy, or so. What strategies for adherence can we give our clients in the hand?
Well, when clients struggle with adherence or their non-compliance, usually because whatever prescribed direction or plan that the coach or the client previously agreed on isn't working for them anymore, and they simply do not have the energy or the emotion to commit to it. It's usually not a time issue. It's an emotional commitment issue, because if we emotionally are obsessed and focused on something, we all will make that happen. Okay? Just like if you chase after an ex-boyfriend that totally devastated your life, or ex-girlfriend or whatever, if you want it, you will sacrifice everything to get them back, right? So taking that example, it's good to have a discussion with the client, see where they're at, see what's hard, and really simplify the plan. I mean, when I say simple, like some of my clients, I literally have them just eating breakfast off of a few healthy protein, carb, and fat choices, fruits and vegetables, and drink 1 cup of water a day. That's all they do. Some clients, I have them walk 1 mile 1 time per week. That's how we start. You can keep your Chick-fil-A, keep your sausages and eggs or whatever you're eating, but 1 day a week, I want you to go out and walk 1 mile. And then the check-in is, did you walk your 1 mile this week? Yes or no? That's it. And I layer stuff in from there. That's how simple you can make it. So coaches think that it has to be everything. It can literally just be one component that the client compromises with you on and is willing to do, and you can build it up.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, all these kind of habit books, like Atomic Habits or whatever else, they all say, start simple, start small. And people are like, oh, but I don't feel any different. Well, it's not about the different feeling, it's about the making it part of your personality and making it something that you, as you say, can build on. If that person that's never worked out and you suddenly say to them, okay, let's do 5 days per week, 40 minutes, they might do that for a week or two, but then life, work gets busy, and then they're throwing everything out of out, and we're back to all or nothing thinking, and that's the last thing that we want.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it this way, like we're basically like reverse engineering dependency, but from a positive light. So if you think about people who are unfortunately alcoholics and they ruin their entire lives based off of, you know, this one substance, people don't start drinking 4 or 5 drinks a day, you know, off the bat. It starts like when they're like 13 years old, they have a sip of beer and it grows over time, and then they place emotional importance in that. And they cope with it, right? So it's the same thing with any habit that us humans can get ourselves into. It's an emotional relationship with what that provides us. And it starts really small.
Very, very good point. And I think for the coaches as well, listening, like thinking about what emotion is your client trying to achieve or soothe or whatever when they are engaging in their maybe not so desired behavior, like the comfort eating or emotional eating or overeating, just in general. I think that's a really, really good point.
Yeah.
And so again, also for coaches or for people that want to start off with either fitness or nutrition coaching or both, I think sometimes the same happens, excuse me, then as with our clients as well, that they feel overwhelmed. It seems like such a goal far away when they're like, oh, if I start with one client, I'm never gonna pay my rent. I'm never gonna be a successful entrepreneur and make 70,000 or six figures per year. How does someone get started in the space?
I mean, you got to be passionate about it, right? It can't be, I get into this because I want to make money or whatever. I mean, I think every single highly successful coach, and when I say highly successful, I mean, I base that off of a couple of things, right? The impact that they make, the respect that they have amongst their peers and the clients in the industry, their level of commitment and passion without the wins, without the achievements. They're still unwavering, internally passionate. And then, of course, you know, client consistency with results, client load, and yeah, finally income, that would define success. But I think all of these people once, at least once, achieve something great with their own physiques, something extreme, something that it's not just an average, oh, I lost 10 pounds. It's like, no, you like won some hard bodybuilding shows. You really transformed. And that's what gets people to notice you. And because social media is all about, you know, relatability and identifying with someone's story. So you have to have a story. You got to have the hero and the villain and all that stuff. And then you tell people about it and you grow your tribe and then it grows from there. That's basically it.
Very good point. I don't think this is actually talked about enough. I do think, of course, as you mentioned too, you need to back that up with knowledge and with science-based tools. I think some people are like, oh, I've lost 5 pounds, I'm going to share that, and they're becoming dogmatic about what worked for them as well. They're like, well, I did that with keto, and that's why all my clients have to be keto, or I did this with this really extreme approach over 12 weeks, that's why everyone has to do that. But I realize that's not at all what you're saying. I like that you believe the coach should be an example as well. And I think what goes through this more than the visual and attracting people that way too is it makes you understand what your clients are going through, perhaps also, or like what they want to achieve. So if someone is telling you they are struggling with this and that, you can be like, hey, this is where I was. I felt, very similar to what you might be feeling right now. This is what makes me a better coach or a relatable coach.
And I think a couple of other like little psychological things that I would say is most people who are buying coaching, they're buying you and they are buying a friendship with you. You can be the most knowledgeable person, but if you have a horrible bedside manner, just like a doctor, you're not going to want to see this doctor, right? So it's about likability, relatability, And to get people to like you and relate to you, and this is something that I've improved on over the years. I'm not saying I'm perfect at it, but what I've learned is downplay your own achievements, keep your own successes quiet, because you don't want to offend anybody, without knowing it. Because everyone is trying their best. Nobody, no human being, this is just human nature, wants to see someone else doing better than them. Okay? For good or wrong, like you want to downplay that, and you want to compliment people, and you want to, when you're giving criticism, you want to make sure that is in a positive light. You want to say what they did well, what you're proud of, not you need to do this better, and make them feel like shit every time they check in with you. So if you can play that right, you become a more likable person, and people want to work with you.
I absolutely agree, but for to play devil's advocate, let's play that out further. And then someone starts not abusing, but they text you, start texting you daily. They start sort of like thinking you're too much of a friend rather than also the person that's supposed to guide them. Where and how do we draw the boundaries there?
So I'll share some more specific examples, right? In the past, right, I have had to deal with these, confrontations or these challenges, and I handled them poorly because I would call the client out and say, "Well, you're not paying me to do this, so stop texting me," or I would make them feel bad for that, right? Nowadays, when that happens, I just don't respond to the text. And I just go to my email and I respond that way. I lead with my behavior and not like being so direct and blunt about it, calling them out. So it's a gentle redirection, not a wall that you throw in their face. So a lot of conflict can be redirected and almost warmed up, instead of having a cold stop like that. That's jarring,
Yeah, I think that's a really good approach. And even potentially just in your intake call or consultation saying like, "Hey, allow me 24 hours to get back to you. I won't respond immediately, or I don't respond on the weekends," or something like that. I think a lot of the newer coaches in particular are a little bit hesitant to draw up these boundaries because they might be thinking, this other coach, John there next to me, he is gonna respond within a half a second, or Jamie, the other coach, she has this policy which where she advertises that you can call her anytime. But if you have that sort of scarcity mindset or fear mindset, you're not gonna make it along in the industry anyway, I don't think.
I was like that too when I first started. When I only had like 10 clients, I was like, "Well, I'm so accessible. You can call me, you can text me, you can email me. I respond within seconds." Every new coach is going to do that and say, "Oh, well, don't go work with old Jeff over there at First Ball Fitness because he's got way too many people. He'll take 2 days to respond to you," right? So that's always the advantage that the younger coaches who are starting out with less people can use. And it's true. I don't have the time to respond as quickly as I used to. But at the same time, it's a balance, right? You don't want to wait more than, like, I would say 24 hours is the sweet spot. Okay. You shouldn't be taking a week to get back to clients. And for the people who are shopping for coaches out there, it's not about the response time, it's about the quality of the response. So, I mean, you could hire a coach that deploys AI. And you can get a response within milliseconds.
Precisely. I will tell
People are
you
doing
from
that.
personal experience as well. A couple of years ago, I was working with someone. She is an IFBB pro and has stepped on Olympia stage several times. And I mean, just from speaking with her initially, I had a really good impression. And then after a while, I noticed that she'd get back to me like this within an instant. But it would be like, "Yep, no," and I was like, "I just asked you like a five paragraph question, and I wanted to have asked for some resources as well, or for like reference." And it was like, "Nope, because this is how we've always done." And I was like, "Yeah, this is not a good idea."
So it's
But
quality. It's quality of the relationships, not the quantity. It's about the meaningfulness and the depth of your relationship with your coach. That's what you should be looking for as a
Absolutely.
customer.
So yeah, I guess talking about clients at a First Call Out Fitness, what is sort of your let's say ideal client, or maybe do you have a specific range of people that you're working with, like age, gender, or goals, or is it like really broad spectrum?
It's honestly very broad. Like I've always like built myself as like the guy or my brand as the brand that can coach anyone through anything. And I put a lot of people on stage. They always look great. I've worked with so many women on gut, thyroid, adrenals, hormones, all that stuff. Men as well, various health conditions. Eric and I, we do it all. And I feel like that's a strong suit of ours is that we can coach the whole spectrum, but we're also very, very good at everything. We're not like jack of all trades, master of none. Like I aim to be a master of like everything. Like that's my goal, but not a single case I can't resolve. And the demographic is pretty even between men and women. Actually, a little bit more women, I would say. More women. But we do coach a large amount of men, and I think we have a couple of young ones on the team. They're like, I coached a 13-year-old boy. His mom obviously did the communication, but he was dealing with like chronic rhabdo, and so I worked with him. We have a couple of younger females on the team, like 19, 20. Eric, coaches the younger ones. But for the most part, it's like more towards like a higher demographic in terms of income. Just because our rates are higher than average, I would say.
Well,
But
quality service it also deserves a quality energy exchange, and therefore I understand that completely. And I think it's great that you say even if you work with broad spectrum, you aim to do your diligence. And from how I know you, that's I've only witnessed that with regards to everything: gut health, hormone issues, stress, again, competitors, and just training and everything else as well. So, very cool. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, and in general for your time today. I really enjoyed picking your brain a little bit and just hearing how you've been. I was saying before we recorded, this was also a little bit selfish. I wanted to catch up with Jeff, so I'm very grateful we had this conversation today, Jeff. Thank you so much.
Well, I'm glad that you invited me on, and you're good in my book. So anytime you want to chat.
Great. Thank you. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Jeff. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow on Instagram or YouTube. And remember, if you want personalized help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we'd love to guide you. One more thing before you go, if you are looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more, and feel free to use our code NCL for your chance to win a $250 gift card every month. Thank you for listening.